Well, hey there, friends. Welcome to Talk Nerdy. I'm your host, Kara Santamaria, and I just want to thank everybody for listening to the show. That's what I want to do. That's how I want to open the show. I just want to say thanks. I want to give specific thanks to a handful of people who kind of go above and beyond because they don't just listen to the show, which you're all doing right now. It's a huge help. It's a huge support. I mean, it kind of wouldn't work, the podcast, if I just talked and nobody actually listened to it. I mean, maybe it would work. It would be a really good kind of existential exercise, I guess. But it works a little bit better knowing that you guys so awesomely go to iTunes, go to Stitcher, go to Podcatcher, all the different tools that you use. Maybe just go to my website and hit the little downloady button on SoundCloud. And then my voice ends up in your ear holes. Man, technology is so cool. And so above and beyond that, those of you who listen and hopefully tell your friends about the podcast and maybe tweet to me about the podcast and maybe even go onto iTunes or Stitcher and rate and review, because believe it or not, just that little step is really helpful in getting the word out. The more I get the word out, the more I can get advertisers, the more I can get advertisers, the easier it is for me to keep this going. So those of you who do that, thank you so much. But there's some of you who go above and beyond. And what you do is you go to my website, carasantamaria.com, and you do things like buy a little merchandise. Or you look at my reading list, which is linked to an Amazon account. And when you buy books that I recommend out of my reading list, a little bit of change goes to the Talk Nerdy Fund. Also, some of you will click through the little links to PayPal or even to Patreon, and you'll actually donate to the show, which is just so huge of you. It's just so huge. And we even talk about that whole process of crowdfunding a little bit later in the episode. But those of you who did that, I want to give you some specific shout outs. Those of you who went on to PayPal and gave me some generous donations, that would include Ingrid Honecker from Loves Park, Illinois, and also Justin Ellison from Corona, California. Thank you two so much. And also, they're on the Patreon at patreon.com/Kara Santamaria. I want to thank Chuck Pell and Jeffrey Sewell, Brian Holden, and Rob. Rob doesn't want us to know his last name, but Rob, I thank you anyway. And lastly, for your incredibly generous donation, actually 2 weeks running now, I want to thank Ron Noblock. You are awesome. Ron, I'm going to send out that signed photo with the personal thank you in the mail tomorrow. And anybody else who is listening who wants to make a little pledge there on Patreon, that's how you pronounce it, wants to be a patron on Patreon, there's some great goodies there for you. I'm going to beef it up even more in the future. So hit me up. Say hi. In the meantime, I am so excited about this week's guest. And honestly, I don't even think I really know how to describe who I had a chance to talk to. I mean, his internet. I'm reading, and sometimes when I read, my brain gets ahead of my mouth. His website calls him Internet Guy, which actually is a really fitting description. He is a hosty, co-hosty type of Vlogbrothers, SciShow, Crash Course. He created these amazing things with his brother John. He also, created and runs VidCon, also a really cool company called Subbable, which recently merged with Patreon. Very, very cool. And also he makes geeky music, and for that reason, I adore him. So without any further ado, please welcome to the show, Internet Guy, Hank Green. Hank, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
I've got to say, this is probably one of the most exciting podcasts that I've done in a long time, mostly because I have never met you in real life.
Oh, is that usually you've met people in real life?
I know every single person I've ever podcasted with. I mean, doesn't really mean I know them all well. And some of them I had only met once previously, and then we sat down together. But we were also in person. So I still haven't met you even right now, except via Skype.
I think that counts.
Maybe it counts. Well, I'll get to know you.
I started a business with a guy, and we were over $1 million in revenue, and like 6 years into it before the first time we saw each other in real life.
Seriously?
Yeah.
We live in a weird age.
Yeah, we do. He didn't even live like in a weird place. He lived just outside of Chicago.
And you're just like, you know what, Chicago, man, it's cold. I'm not busy. Go.
Yeah, I just had a lot going on.
Gotcha. You're busy. He's a busy guy, guys. So I feel very honored. Very honored that you've taken the time today on this lovely Friday right after work to chat with me. It is nice. So where are you?
I'm in Missoula, Montana, which is just this side of Idaho.
Which is the most beautiful place in the whole country.
It is really nice. It's not the most beautiful place in the whole country, though.
You don't think
so?
There's
a lot of beautiful country. Well, Missoula is a nice big flat river valley with mountains all around it. And so that is nice. But I've been to... You know, there's a lot of America out there.
But I bet you people, yeah. I bet you would be in the top five. Not you, but where you live would be in the top five if you surveyed a lot of people.
Well, I think that I want to survey people about how beautiful I am. So if I was in the top five most beautiful places in America, just me being a place, I would finally feel like I could sort of hang up my spurs at that point.
Hank Green, top five most beautiful places in America. So I got to say, I'm thrilled to have you on because I think that you and I have a lot of kind of crossover interests. My podcast is still not terribly well defined. It's called Talk Nerdy. Obviously, I like to talk nerdy. It has a heavy science slant, but sometimes I have comedians on the show. Sometimes I have totally non-science people. I still like to get sciencey on they asses, but I don't have to keep it to that. And you are this jack of all trades. This kind of internet wonder boy. You've started a bunch of companies. You do a bunch of cool series on YouTube. You're a musician. But I do notice that oftentimes I see a science thread in your work. How did that come about?
That's been my, like, one of my primary interests forever. I think by the time I was like 11, my dad had gotten me a subscription to Scientific American, which I read pretty religiously, even though it was a little thick. But I maybe was just fudging my way through it. And, you know, some of the shorter articles I could totally get. But, like, he was very much encouraging me in that vein. He was the Florida State Director of the Nature Conservancy when I was growing up. So he started that chapter of the Nature Conservancy. So he's, you know, super smart, clever guy and like, introduced me to a bunch of wildlife biologists and like we would do like sampling at the neighborhood stream and stuff. So there was that. And then there's, you know, Star Trek The Next Generation, just being all up on my cultural knowledge and like informing my view of the world, not just scientifically, but also culturally. And like, I just love the weird capitalism of Star Trek, the post-capitalist society of TNG. And,
TNG, I love it. You're on an acronym basis.
Oh, yeah, very. my wife and I have seen The Next Generation all the way through together. So, like, after we got together in our 20s, we've seen it together 4 or 5 times. So that's, like, as an adult.
That's, like, really romantic and also, like, shows you that the state of television today, there's just not enough on. There's not enough good programming.
Certainly, you had to watch it. Star Trek.
5 times.
It could
over.
Be a little bit more Star Trek. I wouldn't mind. And if anybody wants to reboot Star Trek right now, I got $5,000 sitting in my pocket right here for you.
You guys,
I'll give to your Patreon. All up on it.
Speaking of Patreon, that's a weird. I'm going to totally interrupt you, and we're going to get back to all of your science geekiness. But yeah. I just started Patreon. I just joined Patreon for the podcast.
Awesome.
Like,
welcome.
I want to say 4 episodes ago. Like, it hasn't even been a full month. You've been doing it for a while.
Well, I started a sort of competing crowdfunding platform called Subbable.
But now you guys are combined.
Yeah, I don't know when this podcast is coming out, but like a couple of weeks ago, as of right now.
Yeah.
They acquired our company and we merged into one, and that one thing is Patreon. And you know, we weren't anywhere near as big as Patreon, like 25 times smaller than them, but we, you know, have a lot of great creators, and two of our biggest creators are us. And so it was very sort of scary to be like moving our audience over, because that was a huge portion of our revenue and like a huge portion of how we pay for SciShow and Crash Course, and did not want to lose that revenue. And luckily our patrons, our supporters have been really amazing and have come over. The majority of them have already come over, and we still have a bit of time before we need the rest of them too. And it seems like things are going well. So yeah, that whole crowdfunding model, I think it just sort of, it enables an entire new kind of content to be created. And maybe this podcast is one of those things. So,
yeah, I mean, it's amazing. I was, you know, for a while I was just using a standard kind of PayPal button on my website because I didn't even do that for a long time. I just did the podcast and I worked to get sponsors. And then people would be like, how do I give to the podcast? And I was like, oh, I can't ask you to do that. And then I started to realize like, okay, Kara, get outside of yourself a little. This is how we pay for creative content now. This is what people do.
Right. And I mean, like the models that we used to have don't exist anymore. So yes. We need another model, and here it is, all shiny and new, ready for us, starting with Kickstarter and Indiegogo, and, you know, it really starting with people just asking. But the structure that these platforms provide, you know, it makes it very clear that without that kind of support, because we live in this weird world where information is sort of seen to be free, that... And in fact, though, like content costs quite a lot of money to create.
Definitely. And we need health insurance.
and things like that, you know, things like food. That, you know, like creating a new model, it turned out to be not horribly difficult. We just had to look back at the past a little bit and you know, sort of reimagine the old days with the new affluence that not all people certainly have, but that there are some people out there. There's a lot of people who make great livings and they love content and they like their lives and they want to help, and that makes them feel good, and it's just a great all around, everyone benefits. And it should be said that there's this group of people who benefit tremendously from Patreon, and it's the people who can't pay.
Exactly.
And nobody thinks about them because they're not going to help us pay the bills. But like in giving to when I give to a Patreon campaign or a Kickstarter campaign, like I feel like, especially with Patreon, I feel like I am helping create content that more people besides me are going to enjoy. And I want those people to enjoy it. I don't want to just enjoy it for myself, which is the subscription model where like I buy it and I get it. And nobody else does.
Totally.
But with Patreon, you buy it, you get it, and everybody else does.
That's why I love it so much. Cool. Because it also helps me as a content creator keep my content free.
Right.
That's what's important to me.
As a creator, as a creator on the internet, you can't stick all your stuff behind a paywall because your audience will never grow.
No, exactly.
You need, like, people aren't going to just sign up and like start subscribing to something without knowing what it is or like getting any connection with it or, you know. Anyway, I'm very passionate about this, and Jack and I are great friends, the founder of Patreon, Jack Conti, and I'm really, really enthusiastic about our coming together, and it's been great, and they are just such a great team.
I'm so glad. And so Subbable for you really just came about because you were making great content and you were like, my listeners, my consumers, my fans want to pay for this. Let's make a platform where they can do it easily.
Yeah. I don't know that necessarily they wanted.
I think they did.
Obviously they wanted to because they, you know, they're doing it.
Really, they do want to. Mine asked me long before I asked them.
Wow.
Like that really did happen, which maybe it's because I came in after this air of crowdfunding was sort of like the status quo. Mm-hmm. But I do think so. I think that your fans want to help. They want to, and also it makes them feel like they're a part of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's huge.
Yeah, and they get some benefit out of it, and like they know that they're helping to create a thing that is good and that they like that resonates with them. But we did a survey. We do a survey every year, and one of the questions we asked a couple of years ago before we started Subbable was, if we charged for Crash Course and SciShow, how much would you pay? And when we added up all the respondents and how much they said, like, they thought would be a fair price if we required them, if we, like, said, you must pay, that number was, like, when we added it all up, and of course there'd be, like, this wouldn't be the actual number, but it was, like, millions of dollars. And I think most, like, some people were just being nice or, like, overly optimistic, but we said, well, if we required them and we'd make millions of dollars, if we just ask, We would probably make like 10 times less than that, and it would fund everything. So,
and that's it worked
basically,
out that way?
That's basically what happened.
That's awesome.
That was sort of the impetus for creating Subbable. And, you know, Jack had a very similar idea at a very similar time.
Yeah. And, you know, that gives hope to, I think, content creators like myself who are still pretty new in the game. Like, I was a traditional kind of, you know, graduate student who then left grad school to become a science communicator, and I had a very traditional job at a mainstream publication as a journalist, and I, you know, was on their health insurance, and I had a 401k. And then when I moved into being a freelancer, like, that's a horrifyingly scary step to take in your life. And of course, I've been very lucky to have a lot of great work on television, which helps pay most of my, like, that is my day job. The podcast, I would love for it to become a bigger part of my day job. And so it's really, I think it really brings me a lot of kind of hope when I see content creators around me becoming so incredibly successful purely through crowdfunding. It's really amazing because I would love to not have ads on my podcast. That would be huge.
Oh, yeah.
I just can't do that until I have enough, you know, users, listener support. And I don't want to require listener support. That's kind of just like the pie in the sky. Hey, if that happened, I wouldn't have to have ads. Wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so do you guys do like a hybrid model? Do you get outside funding or is everything at this point crowdsourced?
We got a bunch of different revenue streams. So
grants and things like that too at this point.
Yeah. So crowdfunding is the biggest piece of our pie.
That's great.
But then we also get money from, we've got money from PBS, from Google, from Bill Gates. And we also have an advertising slice that is substantial and necessary to keep Crash Course and SciShow alive.
And of course, you also have these endeavors that aren't just pure kind of creative content endeavors, but you have started these businesses and you do have other, like you do VidCon and you do all of these other things that, oh my God, your taxes must be a nightmare every year.
Yeah, yeah. You have put your finger right on it. That is, I pay taxes in like six different states. It's awful.
Oh, wow. So I want to talk about some of those cool things. Like for people who don't know, you know, that you're kind of the guy or one of the guys behind so many cool things. You've mentioned Crash Course and SciShow, which I, of course, know you from, and probably the listeners of Talk Nerdy probably know you from. But you have all these other cool kind of endeavors, and you're a musician.
True. my wife is asking me a question.
Sure.
I did not feed her, no.
Are we talking about a child or an animal?
An animal, yes.
Okay, all right, that's good. Then it's okay that you didn't feed her. That's she'll probably be okay.
Yeah. So I don't know how this edit is going to happen, but yeah,
I'm totally not going to edit that out, by the way.
Oh great, fantastic. Yeah, I have a band, Hank Green and the Perfect Strangers. We're going on tour in just a couple of weeks. We'll be on the East Coast if anybody wants to come see us. We play like nerdy punk music.
So perfect. I love that.
Songs about biology and physics and also about like Harry Potter and such.
So like, do you listen to Adam or did you listen to Adam and His Package? Like
I did
high school.
Yes.
Good. So is that like a big influence for you? Because
sometimes I will listen to a song of mine and I'll be like, boy, it's as if Adam is still making music.
Do you know what? I'm going to be your biggest fan now. See, I didn't know this. And I'm like the only person I know that loves Adam and His Package.
Wow. Yeah. No, they're out there. They're out there. And like three of them are in my band. So yeah.
This is amazing. This makes me so happy. So I am excited to see you play. And hopefully some fraction of my listeners who know what the hell we're talking about will be excited about that too. Oh, that's awesome.
And I started playing music just because basically when you're trying to make video content every other day for a year, you have to have some ideas coming out of nowhere. And so I was like, I was basically just learning to play guitar, and it helped me learn to play guitar. And my first song I think I released was about Helen Hunt.
Nice.
And then the second one was, and my longstanding and continual crush on her. She is actually, we've interacted several times now, which should just highlight of my life. Don't tell my wife.
Oh my gosh, this is amazing.
And then I wrote a song about Harry Potter, about the last Harry Potter book coming out. So it was just before Deathly Hallows was released. And so that's how long ago that was. And it like totally went sort of semi-viral, which doesn't happen often to our content, but yeah.
That's great.
It was like, was one of the things that sort of propelled us into like really doing this for like for real.
For real, like actually, you know, investing in it and deciding, hey, people might actually come to our shows.
Yeah, well, no, like that music was way before I even ever thought about ever playing a show, and in fact, was terrified of the possibility of ever playing a show.
Really, but, you didn't form a band with intention of playing live.
No, I was not a band then. It was just me. It was just me and the guitar.
Well, that's all Adam is, if you think about it.
And the package, yeah.
And it's just his package. Yeah. And also, one of his amazing songs is called Pumping Iron for Enya. So you guys have a lot in common, can I say? You just have like super weird crushes.
Yeah, maybe we'll meet someday.
Oh my gosh. And it'll be like this weird Twilight Zone, Black Mirror scenario.
So I was just playing me and my guitar then, and the band formed like a year ago. So that,
that makes me happy.
But when I say it propelled us into doing it for real, I mean us, me and my brother on our video blog, the Vlog Brothers.
Really? That's where it really started.
Yeah. I mean, we had been taking it seriously and doing like, and working hard on videos, but that was when our audience, like it doubled basically. And it didn't just double for that one video. Like it was much bigger than doubling for the one video, but then the video after that, like, which had nothing to do with that video, like people stuck around and they became part of our community. And our community remains very heavily influenced by the Harry Potter fan community, which is a very strong, awesome community on the internet and in the world. And so like that has left a very lasting impression on our community.
And so prior to that, I mean, you said that you were making content. Were you always kind of this entrepreneurial kind of freelancer person? I mean, your brother famously has written many popular books. And so he has kind of followed that. It's a different lifestyle, that kind of work, that sort of self-motivated, I have deadlines. Was that kind of the world that you were always in? Or did you used to like work at Microsoft?
I've done it both ways. I worked at Walmart for a while, so that's like the not Microsoft.
Did you? Were you like a greeter? Like, what did you do?
No, I was a stock boy. Wow. Kind of thing, like putting the stuff up, taking carts in, cleaning up the bathrooms, stuff
like
that.
I like it. You know, it gives you character. Really, it does.
I got a lot of stories that summer. And then I had a normal job. My degree's in biochemistry, so I graduated and I got it. My undergraduate degree, and I got a job at a lab, and I did quality control, and I like made agar plates and washed dishes and fucked around with liquid nitrogen. Sorry, I don't know if we're allowed to curse.
No, we're totally allowed to curse,
and
because I make the rules. Mwahaha. Wait, by the way, where are you from?
I grew up in Orlando, Florida.
You're a southerner. Yeah. See, I'm from Texas, and you said agar, and I said agar. But everyone I know that didn't grow up in the South says auger.
Yeah, no. That, wow.
I totally picked up on that.
I hope we're just not wrong. That's
might
definitely
just be
what
wrong.
My professors said.
Yeah, because they were probably also southern.
Okay. And so I had that normal job. And then during that, I actually started my first like internet thing. Where I was like, I'm going to try to do an internet thing. And so I was living in Orlando, and my commute was on this road, Interstate 4, I-4, which goes through Orlando and connects Tampa to Daytona and goes through Orlando. And it's just an awful road because Orlando's very sprawly, and it wasn't really like that road was built before anyone knew that Orlando was going to be what Orlando is now. And it's really unpleasant to drive on. And so I started a website called ihateI4.com, which was sort of, this was 2001 or two. So
was this like a flash animation?
No,
site?
No, it, but it did. It definitely had
era?
Tables though. It was pre-CSS.
Yeah.
And and it was like a resource for like talking about transportation policy and green living and living closer to where you work and adjusting your work schedules so that you didn't have to drive in rush hour and like just sort of like living in Orlando without that constant stress. And I painted roadside, like I painted like campaign signs. Like when like, you know, people are like, or like we buy houses, those signs, I repainted those I like put ihateI4.com with like a spray paint stencil and I put them next to I-4. And that was my marketing campaign because like early internet and people were like, oh, it's, I mean, not that early internet, but early enough, and like people came, and then like the news did a show on me, and so like there, it sort of gave me a taste. And this was just before I left Florida, by the way, to come to Montana. So like this was happening to me as I moved to Montana, and I thought, oh, I'll continue to keep up IHateI4.com once I moved to Montana. And I moved here, and like the like there are like the interstate is on the edge of town, and you don't go on it unless you're going to Seattle. Like there's no reason to use it. It's certainly not a device for commuting. And I.
And also being mad at I4 at that point would be
well. I stopped being mad. I stopped being mad at anything because everything was much nicer here. People were much nicer
because you live in Montana. Because it's gorgeous.
It's much more chill. So that died, which is fine. But it was like it was a thing. It was like my first like sort of attempt to build a community on the internet and like have a thing that was a thing. And
there are still people there, aren't there? Like it hasn't been updated in 10 years.
I don't think if you go to IHateI4.com, you will find anything. I can't guarantee that, but I probably let the domain lapse.
It's porn. I'm sure it's porn. Yeah. That's how it works. How fun and weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
How fun and weird. And also that something like that taste of kind of this is what it means to just make something basically out of thin air, and then it's like if you build it they will come. Like that was your field of dreams.
It was a very weird field of dreams. But so I've worked at television stations, and then for a while I was freelance writer, and I like started my own blog, and that was a thing. And then I went to school also. I like went back to school because it's not a really great job market here in Missoula. It's too nice for people, like too many people live here for the number of jobs we have. And so everybody.
And they're educated.
Yeah, so it's lots
too.
Of highly educated people who have like four jobs that are all like 5 hours a week.
So you took a fair amount of time in between. See, this is like a common theme, I think, with my podcast, because I talk to a lot of academics, but I also love talking to graduate students or people who are like in weird positions in graduate school where they're like, is this really what I want to do for the rest of my life? I'm trying to make decisions about, do I, you know, finish my PhD? If I do finish my PhD, do I even want to stay in academia? And so I love hearing about kind of alternative paths in deep academics. So you did an undergrad in science and you ultimately did go back to school. How long did you take off in between the two?
I think only a year, maybe two years.
My God, you like accomplished too much. You make me feel lazy over here.
Well, I had a lot of jobs at the same time.
Oh, so. Okay. I see. So you're a job juggler.
Yeah, which is a very Missoula thing. Like, yeah.
And what did you ultimately go back to school to study?
I went back for a while and I did some microbiology stuff. And then I decided to get into environmental get a master's in environmental studies, which is at the University of Montana. The environmental studies program is very weird. It's like basically you get a degree, an MS in whatever you want. It says environmental studies, and whatever you happen to do while you were here is that's good for us. So my focus was kind of on nonfiction writing. So a lot of journalism stuff and like creative nonfiction, which is very like sort of froofy. How do I feel about this leaf? And
that was your thesis, wasn't it? It was how you felt about this one sad leaf.
Actually, my thesis was about whether the internet robs us of our place-based connections, which I think is still an interesting topic. But it was
I always end up going there on a panel for whatever reason. It's like that topic always comes up.
Yeah. Well, you should read my thesis. I'm sure if I read it now, I would be embarrassed. But you know.
That's how that goes.
So, yeah, I went back and like that was interesting because I got to get a little bit of a journalism background and also, you know, more science background. But like what it turned like it sort of ended up being like that entire program turned into preparing Hank for being a freelance web developer for lots of environmental nonprofits. So like understand the motivations and structures of environmental nonprofits and also database design and voila, jobs, lots of them.
The database design is the operative term
So local nonprofits wanted to work with me and I worked with them and it was kind of awful because freelance is not that I have anything against those people, but freelance is awful. It's hard. It's very hard. And it's,
freelancing is hard, especially if you're like I freelance. I am my own corporation at this point. So I'm not even a sole proprietor anymore. I'm an entity, which is super weird.
Oh, yeah.
So like none of my checks are even made out to me.
Oh, yeah.
Like they're all made out to my business. But and it's a weird thing, but it's extra hard if you're only working for nonprofits. Like, I can't imagine. I work, one of my jobs is that I work for public television. Mm-hmm. And it's tough. I love it to death. And it really is kind of like where my heart is. But it's definitely not where my bread nor my butter lie. You know what I
Certainly
mean?
Certainly not your butter. Yeah.
Yeah. It's important, yeah. But you're right. It can be trying, especially for somebody who is in some ways motivated by financial success, yeah. Like that yeah. is a driver for you to want to continue to create and make things. It's like, oh, how do I make money in this realm? And how do I make money over there? Yeah. And there's something I should be able to tap into. And yeah, if all you're doing is nonprofit, which is amazing. Like, I'm so glad people do it.
Yeah.
And
well, I mean, I was
always
charging
wanted to be tied
them.
To it.
Like,
of course yeah. you were charging.
That was, and like, I was just out of grad school. So any client I was going to have, I wasn't going to charge a lot of money. And
true, but you're not ever going to get the kinds, you're not going to be able to command the kinds of fees.
Right. But it was never the money about that. It was just having all of these different bosses that didn't understand what I did and being not very good at explaining it to them. So, that was a fairly small part of my life. But yeah, it's...
But now you make things, lots of things.
Lots of things,
and like,
yeah.
Lots of people come to them. So SciShow and Crash Course, I think, are some of the bigger things for me, I guess, that I identify with. I'm not sure how big of your kind of pie mm-hmm. they are. Mm-hmm. But I even recently, very good friends with Phil Plait. I know that you have a great connection with Phil Plait yeah. and, worked with him for many, many years, but finally got him on the podcast recently. And he was so excited because he was just venturing into this new astronomy mm-hmm. crash course. I guess you just call it a crash
course. We call it a crash course. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. And so exciting for him. And since then, now it's up and it's available,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and it's doing great. Can, well, that's, watch lots it. Of people are watching it. It's getting really great traffic, and I love watching them myself. And I actually find that I learn things, which I guess it shouldn't be surprising. But, you know, sometimes you're like, oh, I know all about science stuff. I'm good. I don't need. And then you're like, photosphere. Right. I've heard yeah. photosphere, but I never really knew what the photosphere was.
No, yeah, it's total bullshit to expect that, you know, as somebody, I think that we have in some aspects of our careers been in similar places where we're expected to report on science that we have no background
yeah, yeah,
in.
Yeah.
And so, you know, because I had a very similar thing. I went to the University of North Texas and I got a degree in, I say I have a master's in neuroscience, but technically my degree is in biology because they don't have a neuroscience master's.
Right, right.
I have a master's in biology, but I didn't take a single non-neuroscience course.
Yeah.
It's a very specialized, but it's the same kind of thing. It's like, get what you want.
Yeah.
We've got lots of options. And so, you know, I studied the brain, but then here I am writing about like the Higgs field. And I'm like, I don't understand the words I just wrote
yeah,
down.
Yeah.
But it's fascinating. But that's my favorite part mm-hmm. of doing science communication
yeah.
is that I still get to, you don't ever understand something fully until you can teach it to somebody else.
That's absolutely true, and that ended up being why I did well in undergrad is because I had a lot of friends who needed a lot of help, and I helped them, and like suddenly I went from like getting biochemistry to like being a professor of biochemistry in my dorm room, you really do get it. And then the other thing is like when I graduated and I started working at labs, I was like, you know, I really liked learning about this stuff. But practically doing it it's like the information entrance into my brain is much slower. Of course, the information mm-hmm. that I'm getting is new information and it may even be new to science. But like I have always been just sort of a really big fan of learning. And so that sort of slowed down when I got into professional science. And
especially in technical science.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
not
with
if
quality
you're a professor, it's one thing.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. If you're working in a lab day in and day out and it's not necessarily a research
right.
lab, that can be even tougher.
Yeah. So I and with what I do now, which is communication of science and other things, mm-hmm. I get to learn new things constantly. Like that's my job is to get all of the information into my head and then figure out how the best way to get it out for other people to understand who like had that same base level of knowledge that I do, or maybe like, you know, a similar level of knowledge that I do. And mm-hmm. In a topic that like I knew nothing about, but now like sort of I get the topic and I also get where everyone else is, you know, 'cause I was just there. And so you can like, that's just very rewarding because, you know, you get to make content that people like, but you also get to learn. You like, and I just love to learn, which is a good trait in a human, I think.
No, totally. And I feel like we're so lucky that we get to have these jobs basically as, I don't know, middlemen in some respects.
Yeah, yeah, information like, middlemen.
Exactly. And I mean, it would be great if we lived in a world where we didn't need these middlemen because everybody just was literate, fully literate in science. But that's, you know, kind of a pipe dream. So it's like so cool to be able to bridge that gap, to be like, okay, what is probably confusing to people when we throw these terms around? How do I make that really kind of digestible? But also when you sit down with some super hoity-toity fancy pants professor, how do you make them trust you enough to open up to you and be really kind of cool and off the cuff?
Yeah, it's hard. And it's, I mean, and I don't actually do a lot of primary research like that. I don't do a lot of talking directly with professors or anything. I would love to do that more. I've done it some, but
yeah.
But the, it's this, oh, I forgot what I was going to say. Never mind. I have no idea.
It happens, you know, it happens at the end of a long day when you're Hank Green and you have like 12 jobs. You probably have more than 12 jobs.
I don't know. Everybody does lots of different things.
Sure they do.
You said earlier you don't know how much of my life Crash Course and SciShow are. They're like the big, you know, they're the things that take up the majority of the time. Vlogbrothers, which is our original channel, I work on that stuff like one or two days a week. Mm-hmm. And then SciShow and Crash Course I'm working on most of the rest of the time. And then VidCon is like, you know, I sort of like have meetings with the VidCon staff people to like make sure that we're doing the right things and to understand like where we're at. But I don't work much day to day on VidCon except content, like the actual stuff that happens, which is not a huge part of the planning of the event, honestly.
But I'm sure that ramps up as you get closer to the actual con.
Well, the content doesn't really. We have most of that locked in pretty early because we want to make sure that we know who's going to be there and who can, and fill up the panels and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like the weird thing about VidCon is like a month before VidCon happens, like the work kind of dries up. We're like, well, VidCon's done. We're ready. Because like then it like he's sort of transferred over to like the people who are actually like going to implement a lot of the things who don't actually work for us, they're contractors.
But it wasn't like that the first year you did VidCon.
No. The first year we did VidCon, I literally like woke up at 12 in the morning, like the day before VidCon or the night before VidCon, and I was like, I forgot signs. I have to get some signs to tell people which direction to go when they come down the escalator. I like called a sign company in Anaheim and I was like, hey, can I have a sign tomorrow morning? Like I need it in 2 hours. And they were like, yeah, sure. And I was like, okay, am I freaked out enough? And then literally I get to the sign place, pick up the signs, bring them down. And I see in front of me the sign that I had ordered and forgot.
Of course.
About.
Yeah. The sign that was like the first thing on your to-do list that you crossed off like months before.
Yeah.
That's how it works. Uh-huh. By the way, I need to take a break. I need to take a break to thank my sponsors. But before I do, I have to just tell you that you have an amazing voice. I mean, I'm sure you've heard this all the time. But like, do you do voice work too?
I haven't done much voice work. I have asked if anybody wants me to because I have this nice microphone and it's very easy and it pays well.
It does pay really well.
I haven't had a lot of people take me up on it.
Let's see who's listening now who has any power in that world, because I'm telling you, you are like you could be an amazing cartoon character. That's a compliment, I promise.
Okay.
All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with Hank Green. Today's episode of Talk Nerdy is brought to you by Squarespace. You may have heard me say it before, but I absolutely adore Squarespace. My very own personal website, carasantamaria.com, is a Squarespace website, and I made it all by myself, which you may not believe this, but is actually kind of a big deal because I'm kind of incompetent when it comes to web design. The greatest thing about Squarespace is that it's really, really DIY. It makes it very user-friendly. It's so intuitive. It really is just drag and drop, and you can make beautiful, beautiful websites. One super cool feature, which is sort of new, is this feature called Cover Pages. It allows you to set up a beautiful one-page online presence within minutes. So if you're one of those folks who doesn't want a lot of interaction, or you just need a placeholder while you decide to build out a lot of site navigation, a lot of different buttons and layers and things like that, you can throw up a cover page literally right now, today, within the next 5 minutes, and have that online presence that you've been waiting to have. Squarespace is simple, it's powerful, it's really, really beautiful. And a big part of, I think, the draw for me is that they've got 24/7 support via live chat and email. And I'm somebody, as you guys probably know, who works in the middle of the night. I'm actually recording this copy at, let's see, 1:37 a.m. And this has happened to me before. I've had questions while I was working on my website in the middle of the night, and I emailed the support team and they got back to me right away. It's really helpful, such a great feature, especially for people like me who don't love talking on the phone with tech support. It's also only $8 a month, and if you buy Squarespace for the year, you get your domain name for free. Oh, and another great, great aspect is that the design is fully responsive. I know this matters to you guys so much. Remember the days of Flash animation sites? You would do this beautiful site in Flash, and then you'd go to look at it on an iPhone or an iPad, and it wouldn't play. Well, Squarespace has responsive design, which means you build your website, you make it beautiful, and then whatever device you're using, whether it's an iPhone, an Android phone, an iPad, I don't know, a desktop computer. Do people still use those? I think they do. It'll scale it, and it'll look really great on every single device. So, you guys, it's time now. Start your trial with no credit card required, none at all, and you can start building that website right now, today. And then after you've built it, you've played around and you've gone, oh, this is so great, I need to publish it, and you've decided to sign up for Squarespace, make sure that you use the offer code NERDY, right? Like the title, Talk Nerdy, but it's just the word NERDY. You'll get 10% off your first purchase, and you don't realize it, but you will be showing your support for Talk Nerdy. All of those signups, they go to help out the show. Once again, that is 10% off your first purchase when you use the offer code NERDY. I want to thank Squarespace for their support of Talk Nerdy. Squarespace, build it beautiful. All right, we are back with Hank Green, and during the save break, we were talking about some of the differences between podcasting and kind of being in front of the camera. Mm-hmm. And now you and I both do a lot of things where our face is in front of a camera.
Yep.
We probably deal with slightly different issues because your face doesn't have boobage near
well,
to it.
Well, does your face... Okay, near. Okay, I was like, well, tell me more about your face, Karen. Yeah, I have noticed that with a lot of my friends who happen to be women, and not just boobage. It just, I honestly don't think the boobs matter. It just, it's that you're a woman. And
it really
if they
is,
can
right.
find something to comment on, they can. They can
find
something.
Yeah, because it's either going to be, yeah, oh my God, so hot, would fuck. Yeah. Or total gross, would not fuck.
Right. And it's like, well, why are you here?
Like, and also, like, I don't care because I wouldn't
right,
fuck
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
What is, yeah.
So, like, much less likely now.
Yeah, exactly. And that's just a whole thing where, you know, I have never had a YouTube presence other than as sort of a permanent or professional guest on other YouTube things. So I am very closely aligned with the Young Turks, which is a very large news network on YouTube. And I am a pretty regular, or historically was a pretty regular guest. I've been doing a lot of other work, so I haven't been on that much lately, but I'm about to do a big run with them soon. And I also, when I was at HuffPost, did this series Talk Nerdy to Me, which was actually a web series that lived on HuffPost, and they had their own proprietary player. But then after a certain point, they learned, like, okay, we should probably put this on YouTube too. So it had kind of a small living there. But so I don't have to deal with, like, daily or weekly being like, should I read the comments? Should I not read the comments? Oh God, my head's going to explode. But I definitely am on YouTube video or in YouTube videos enough to see how intense the YouTube comments can be.
Yeah. And it's, we, on SciShow, we have one female host of four hosts. And when she started, it was like just people suddenly had a lot of opinions about what the host looked like. And that just wasn't a thing that happened before then. And it was really...
Are you there?
I am here. I can hear you. I'm recording on my audio. I'm looking at my Skype now. It says that I'm making noise. It's on. It's your fault, not mine.
No, I can hear... It's my fault, but I can hear you now. So I think we got it. I think we can edit it together, too.
Okay.
Just pick up where you stopped.
Yeah. And it's just... It's really... Because I thought that we had a better audience than that. And of course it was. It wasn't anywhere near the majority. It was probably less than 5% of the viewers. But it was just like, really? I thought that wasn't what we had here.
But and that's just was. Intrinsic in YouTube. It has nothing to do with you.
Well, it's not. It has to be something beyond YouTube. It has to be something that's intrinsic in men or young men or in our culture. And like,
but for whatever reason, YouTube like brings it out of them because like my Patreon people are not like that.
Well, but,
my
but your Instagram Patreon people like.
Yeah, they're my real fans.
Yeah,
like,
those
the
are the dedicated people that, like no one care about you and not like, looking
and
at you.
I think it's the same thing when you look at, like, you know, your Twitter responses and even, like, on Facebook. I guess it's the people who have chosen to say, like, I'm going to hit follow. But also, I feel like it's an even bigger commitment to sit down and, like, watch a full video on YouTube.
You'd
and then
think.
To go, I need to say something about this.
Yeah.
Like, it's necessary that I log into my account and I type these words that are next to my fucking name. And then everybody can read them. But that's a thing. I don't know. It's a thing. I don't get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? You're right. It's a small percentage. I think the issue is just
But
that.
It's... No, I mean, like, the fact that it's a huge number of people, I don't think it's a... I don't think it's... Even if it's a small percentage, it's not a small impact. I think it has a huge impact on the kind of people who end up, like, being comfortable with it. Because I know if I were treated the way, like, early in my YouTube career, if I were treated the way that a lot of, like, the female creators who are, you know, just getting started on YouTube, if I was treated like that, I would have peaced out immediately.
Yep.
I would have been like, I have no interest in being a part of whatever this is. Because, like, clearly it's a bunch of balls. So I think it has a huge impact on the people who participate in it. And I think that it's a lot of why we see a lot more guys on YouTube, because it's just, it's kind of a hostile place. The internet
yeah,
is,
it's sort of a bummer that it does have that negative feedback effect, which is maybe even to some extent the intent of it. And so for a lot of female creators, I think the idea is just don't read the comments, which is a bummer because a lot of us say, like, that's my community and I want to interact with them. And I don't want to feel like I'm not allowed to, because if I do, it's going to, like, make me horribly depressed every day. So for me, my thing is just kind of only read the comments when you're in the mood that says, like, you know, when you're like in a it'll roll off my back kind of mood, because if you're feeling sensitive, which all people do sometimes, then you just it's like picking at a scab. It's just not a good idea. And yes, I do think it's a small percentage. I just think that that percentage is super loud. And unfortunately, unfortunately, because of the democratization of the internet, the voice of, like, this one really angry kind of violent person can be just as loud. And just as we know, like, happy people don't leave Yelp reviews, right? Like, only people who are just, like, really upset are going to go and leave that negative review. And so we have to sort of take it with a grain of salt when we see it. But it's not easy to do. And we're not superhuman. Like, we are still people the same way that you, the person writing the comment, are people.
Yeah. People, and I think that, like, that's another thing about culture, is that we sort of forget that when someone's on a screen and in the sort of TV mode of our brains, like, we're thinking about this person like they're a celebrity. And, like, we in our culture, we sort of think it's okay to do certain things to celebrities. We think it's okay to judge them by the way they look. We think it's okay to sort of follow them around and take pictures of them in their private lives. Like, all these things are super weird. And it's kind of like, because now I'm on YouTube and I'm getting 100,000 views a video, like, I'm that level of famous, but I'm not, and don't do that, please.
Yeah. Exactly. And also, and it's like in our daily lives, it's so weird to me. I just brought this up on another episode, so I'm sorry if I sound redundant, but I was talking to Chris Mooney, who I was recording with, about driving electric cars, and I was saying when I was first shopping for my electric car, I tweeted, like, what kind of electric car should I get? And all these people were like, get a Tesla, you should buy a Tesla. And I was like, I feel like I shouldn't have to tell you that I can't afford a Tesla. And I literally got a response from this one guy that was like, yeah, but you're on TV.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, as if just every person, the minute that a camera rolls on them, they're like, oh, welcome to TV. Here's $1 million. Uh-huh. And you're like, no, it doesn't work that way. Uh-huh. Like, at all. If you come to LA, Boulevard of Broken Dreams, like, you come to LA and you talk to people, even the people who you might know as, like, oh, that character actor, I see him in everything. Yeah. He's making, like, scale. He's making the daily minimum that you can make, and he's maybe working 30 days out of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just, it's just a cultural thing that I think we are kind of accustomed to say.
Yeah, we think that, that, it's like, the weird thing is that, like, movie and TV people are the, like, and, like, CEOs are the only people who we know how much money they make.
That's true.
Because they, like, release that as a press point.
And,
like,
and sports.
Brad Pitt was paid $30 million. Oh, yeah, and sports, which is another, like, another sort of celebrity thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you look at, like, a professional team, you just assume, oh, well, they all make as much money as, insert name of sports human, because I don't.
I couldn't come up with one either.
Yay!
Wayne Brady. No, that's that funny guy.
I thought you were going to say Wayne Gretzky. And I was like, wow, that is a random reference.
So I remember a sports person. I'm not sure what he plays or when he's from.
Amazing. But yeah, it is an interesting kind of thing. And you know what? I remember one time I was having a hamburger. I think it was a hamburger with my friend Tommy. And my friend Tommy said something that resonated with me. And I don't know how true it is, but I'm hopeful that maybe it is true. And he said, the internet is still pretty new. Like, we as sort of old young people, which I guess I would consider myself, somebody in her 30s, I'm an old young person.
Yeah.
I did not have Tay interwebs when I was born. I had a Commodore, and my dad made me keep a Doogie Howser style
nice.
Diary.
Good, yes. Good parenting.
Good dad. But I didn't really get the internet until I, or have access to the internet until probably like early or mid middle school. And around then I started learning, you know, that's when we started getting away from card catalogs, and that's when we started learning internet searches. And by the time I was in college, it was a huge part of research for me. And so we had this sort of growth period within our lifetime as, I guess, Gen, what would you call us? Millennial, like, Gen Y millennials.
Old millennials,
Old millennials, exactly. And so he was saying that, you know, just like when you're in a car, you can, like, somebody cuts you off and you're like, you motherfucker, I will murder your mother. And you're just like so mad. And you would never say that thing to the person's face because that's just not polite society. You can yell it behind the windshield. But in an elevator, you wouldn't like scream at somebody. Mm-hmm. That's where the internet is kind of wild, wild west. But for kids who are coming up with it, that he really strongly believes that there will be sort of a common decency and a protocol that will be developed. That I'm not I don't know. What do you think about that?
I think that, I have watched protocols develop, but the way that they develop is they develop differently on different online subcultures. Like, you have a very specific, you know, you look at the comments on a Reddit thread, and you can almost know what they're going to be. Like, the number one comment's going to be a really clever joke, and then the comment on that comment's going to be, like, a joke that makes that joke slightly funnier, and it's going to go on for a bunch, and then, like, you close a couple down, and then you'll find one that's like, you know, here's the actual source of this story, and it's not as big of a deal as the headline makes it out to be. You know, it's, you know, sort of like what it's going to happen on, like, the front page community of Reddit. And then if you go on a subreddit, you'll have a different subculture that responds to things differently. And then you go on 4chan, and those people are defining their own thing.
Okay, Hank, here's the thing. Here's my advice to you. You don't go on 4chan.
Right. You don't.
I've heard.
And then
you go on YouTube, and the first three comments are first, second.
Well, Possibly. And but like I've also seen like on our YouTube videos, like on SciShow mm-hmm. videos, we have very different style of commenting than we do on Vlogbrothers or on Crash Course. On Vlogbrothers, we get a lot of people like it's very supportive and like people are talking to each other and it's much more of a chat room vibe than it is like a comment vibe. And I think that like online cultures will define themselves. But there will be online cultures who define themselves very poorly and like and who create like antagonistic, gross, angry, abusive cultures. And those people like occasionally, like you like we have seen, you know, 4chan and others do, will just sort of like sort of ooze out or like suddenly explode out upon something else. And so that culture shock is intense. It's like, you're talking weird. Like this is not like how people behave on this corner of the internet. And we're like, well, we're not from that corner of the internet. We're the swashbuckled pirates of the, you know, tweens.
What is happening? Is 4chan, are you defining 4chan right now as the swashbuckling pirates of the tweens? They're going to be so mad.
Cut. Don't put it in. I don't want to make 4chan angry.
You never want to make 4chan angry. We love you, 4chan, and I really love all of my anonymous Twitter followers. Thanks, Anon. Anon 1 and 2 and Anon 3. Okay.
But that particular the culture war that we just witnessed that happened on the internet, and that has sort of continued with a little bit of the Reddit v Tumblr thing, but like more so with the whatever the thing was that was defined as Gamergate, and that hopefully we're moving
that's what
past.
It's still I don't think it's completely.
I
past.
Know it's not, but it's
we're past it,
becoming more mild, and that thing's going to continue happening, and like those, you know, because the internet feels like one thing, but it isn't, and it has lots of different groups that interact in lots of different ways. When those two, like when suddenly you have two groups of people who have very different values, very different worldviews, suddenly occupying the same space, whenever that happens, there is conflict. Like
that's an important point.
Mideast, you know?
Yes, and it has so much less to do with the internet, and it has so much more to do with fear and racism and homophobia and gender bias and all of those things that feed into intolerance.
Right. Intolerance and like and very diverse worldviews. And of course, like one of the worldviews is dumb and needs to stop, and one of them isn't. But like the people inside of those worldview, that worldview doesn't feel that way. They feel completely rational and like that they're making really great decisions. And
then they're like, why does the rest of the world disagree with me? Like women and shouldn't drive. I don't understand. And we're like,
So like, from a sociological perspective, sort of the first culture war of the internet kind of just happened. And that's very interesting. But it's hard for me to be interested in it because I'm so angry.
Oh, for sure. And it's also, for me, the most interesting part is seeing like white reporter ladies with like perfect hair on CNN talking about it. It's like amazing to me. Yeah. Like people who have no idea what's going on.
Oh yeah. Well, the thing is, I still don't really know what the frick that was.
Yeah, but you know how to not be like super lame when you talk about it. That's the best part. The best part is the cultural shifts that are happening that are really generational that we get to be a part of. But also we're kind of slowly becoming the old men and old women of this scenario. Yeah. And I say this a lot, but, you know, my friends who have young kids are like, oh my God, I have a 3-year-old who's in preschool and she's like learning how to code. And I'm like, that's amazing. But when she is 12 and she is writing all of her own programs and she's like, hey mom, how do you not know this? You're so old. And you're going to be like, you're right. Like I'm like grandma who's like, I can't figure out the buttons on my phone.
Yeah.
Like that's what it's going to be. Maybe not for you because you have such skills, but definitely.
Well, I'll tell you what it is. My audience is younger than me. And so in order to continue communicating with them, I have to be like, okay, what the frick is Snapchat?
Exactly.
I'm just going to do this. I'm going to download that app and I'm going to be like, all right, I'm just going to vomit whatever you want all over this new medium. And then like a week or two later, I'm like, oh yeah, this makes sense. This is a way, this is just a thing. Yeah. It's like when I didn't get Facebook, you know, and you know, then you got Facebook. It just, you just have to sort of throw yourself in and, but
there are definitely still things that make me feel old. Like I could see, you know, like, hey, young kids who listen to my show, I'm going to go have drinks with PewDiePie. Like, that's going to be fun for me. Like, I don't know if that would be fun for me. Maybe
that
really
would be
close.
Very fun for you. I think you would love that.
It probably actually would be.
It would
really,
be amazing.
Really,
Felix is amazing. You would have a great time having drinks with Felix.
So I take it you've had lots of drinks with PewDiePie.
I haven't, but I have hung out with him, and I've talked to him mostly remotely because he lives
and the truth is that
far away.
You're right. But it's not even that, because it's not even him as a person. Like, he is actually really funny and probably is a really cool guy to hang out with.
Yeah. He's super smart. Yeah.
It's the culture of consumption that I still, it's hard
to
crack.
It's like I'm not, I don't see myself like I'm going to go and hang like, and like watch a bunch of PewDiePie videos in a row. Though, if you try it, you might like it.
well, I did learn that with Jenna Marbles. That's true. Oh, I feel I used to always be like, I don't get it. Why? And I'd be like, YouTube is this weird thing and it's the people that consume there are not, they don't have the same taste as me. And then I would go and I would be like, this is like really funny.
Yeah.
This is funny, and I get why people love her, because I want to go hang out with her. I don't want to have drinks because I don't drink, but I want to go hang out with her.
Yeah,
that would be really fun.
I got an email from Jenna a few months ago, and I was just like, you know, the only thing I hate about this email is that like I can't share it with the entire world because it is so funny. And like I know that you right now you have to go and make a video that has to be very funny. And in addition to that, you just wrote me this email that like made me laugh out loud like 8 different times. I just like, I'm amazed by her humor and creativity and intelligence. Like, she's awesome.
Seriously,
I find it very strange. Like, YouTube is sort of seen to be a little bit of a cultural weird, I don't know. I'm not going to say any of the words I just thought of. but it feels to people a little like, you know, like it's just tweens and little kids and all the content's kind of crappy.
It's easy to dismiss that way.
And
it really is.
It is dismissed. But when I like most, like 95% of the YouTubers I meet are not just smart and funny. They're like driven and they're creative and like they have, and it's, but it's also a different kind of like creator or like creative person than the old style famous person, because they're not just like good actors and they haven't just like spent all of their time honing that craft. They couldn't do that because they also have to be producers and they have to be writers and they have to be, you know, sound designers and
they
have to figure out all this stuff. And then they, like a lot of them, have to build a business on top of it and make good decisions and not get screwed over by the Hollywood infrastructure. So like,
And meanwhile, this is happening while some of them are like 19 years old.
Yeah. And they have to make all these great decisions, which is very hard when you're suddenly famous. And and the other thing is like a lot of them are very shy and like introverted people, because it turns out wanting to connect with lots of people is not the same thing as being extroverted, because when I make a video, I get to choose every single one of my takes and I get to sit down in front of my computer and I get to craft this thing and I get to spend hours and hours by myself in my office with no one interrupting me, just making a thing. That is not a thing that extroverts like would be comfortable doing. And so like this first round of YouTubers, like I was, you know, running VidCon, I was sort of surprised because I'm a little bit extroverted. I don't know if you can tell, but a ton of the people we wanted to come to the conference were like, I can't do that. I have like serious social anxiety. Like I can't be around a bunch of people. And I was, and like, it was not that happened once or twice. It was that it happened a lot. And it was like, I guess that makes sense that like being a YouTuber is a pretty isolated activity.
Yeah, and so all of a sudden to be thrust into some like meet and greet with you know, thousands of fans could probably be really overwhelming.
Yeah, well, it's overwhelming for everyone, even if you aren't an anxious person generally.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But, well, you know what, Hank? I've kept you for like longer than I promised I would. So
before we go,
I know, I have to ask you, I end every podcast with the same two questions. And now I guess you're just tasked with figuring out how to answer them in very few words because you have plans. So the first question that I ask everybody is, when you look to the future, what are you most concerned about? Like, what keeps you up the most at night? And on the flip side of that, to end not on a bummer note, is when you look to the future, what are you most optimistic about? What do you hope for?
I am most concerned about like the mix of income inequality and change brought on by global warming, climate change, like stuff. Like that is sort of a recipe for instability that is going to be a challenge for humanity to overcome, because once there are people like a large, like if we end up in a situation where there's a large segment of people who are unable to feed themselves or their children, and then there's also a large segment of the population who is just magnificently well off, and I don't mean like Bill Gates, I mean like just a lot of people in America who, like, you know, we have way enough, you know, like me, for example, like most people, you know, who have good jobs in America. And like that, you know, probably won't be it could be a huge destabilizing force worldwide. I think probably America will be fairly able to handle it, unless we just really are like have terrible leadership. Yeah. But worldwide, it really does terrify me, like in terms of like the probabilities of things that could cause, like, you know, sort of backward movement in the things that I care about, like people being educated, more people, you know, surviving to adulthood, more people having healthy, happy lives, more people having access to education and food. That seems like the most likely thing to cause that to move backward.
Totally. And in the interest of time, whereas usually I would pontificate here, I'm just going to say ditto.
All right, good.
So yeah. You got to end on a positive note. What are you looking forward to?
I, in my very sort of brief and like haphazard studies of history, what you see is that the most amazing things get done when people face an adversary, and almost always. And like this, for example, like sort of a cultural unification of Europe happened when you know, sort of the ancestors of Genghis Khan were sort of headed that way, and Europe was like, turns out we aren't very strong. We do not have the capability to handle this. and Europe was sort of able to band together, and it sort of became a unifying force for a lot of disparate powers in Europe, and it became a very good thing for progress in Europe. So when you have that thing to oppose, and traditionally that thing has been another group of humans, which is too bad. Like, it would be, and like in my perfect world, we find that thing that bands us together, not as nation states or as like, you know, a bunch of nation states banding together, but that like connects us and makes us think and work together as a whole species. As a whole planet.
Well, and that thing could be that climate
change.
And
if that thing, if climate change becomes that thing, then that actually might end up being a very good thing for
us. I think it's one of the, I mean, it's the best candidate, you know, because we share the planet. So there's that.
The main, like, there's a bunch of my cynicism is like, here's all the reasons why that won't happen.
Yeah.
And there's also the bit of me that's like, maybe this like external force, like it's sort of like a false thing that people are just sort of like pick out from history, and they're like, look at these moments where they had an adversary, but really you always had an adversary, so maybe it's just bad science being done. But so I don't know for sure, but my hope is that the difficulties that will be brought on by climate change will be initially really challenging, but will allow us to band together and sort of for once, for maybe the first time ever, like consider ourselves to be, you know, members of a species and not members of a culture.
I like it. I dig it. All right. It's plug time. Woo. Tell everybody where they can find you and where they can see all your cool work.
Well, if you go to patreon.com/talknerdy, you can give you can give $5, $1, $4, $3, $18 per episode, and Talk Nerdy will be able to continue being a magnificent podcast where amazing people talk about amazing things, and it's so interesting, and you just spent all this time with your life getting better and like having a good time while you were exercising or commuting or whatever the heck you were doing, just sitting in bed. And how valuable is that to you? It's and not only to you, but all the people who aren't able to pay. How valuable is it to them? But
hey,
if you want to find out,
check is in the mail. I'm telling you, your check's in the mail.
If you want to find out more about me, I'm at youtube.com/vlogbrothers, VLOG brothers, and SciShow, SciShow, and Crash Course, which is spelled like Crash Course. And also, if you're interested in online video, VidCon is a place to learn about that. If you're interested in storytelling, NerdCon Stories is a new event we're putting on in Minneapolis. You can find out about all those things mostly just by Googling them, because let's be honest, who has websites anymore?
and your tweets, how do they tweet to you?
I'm at Hank Green.
Well, that's boring, but easy. Hank, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me. I think, made me think twice about some of my cynicism with YouTube. And I always love it when somebody challenges some of the ways that I've been kind of stuck. And that's huge to me. So thank you for that. And thanks for making me laugh and getting me excited about your new band, which is not Adam and His Package, but I love just as much. And everybody else listening, thank you for coming along for the ride. I look forward to the next time we get together to talk nerdy.